In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to them and confront them. They can't stand that.
Back we go into the fringe with more discussion on free energy, anti-gravity, and specifically from the visual evidence of UFO propulsion systems. Here we are now moving through the 21st century, yet still reliant on transportation systems that burn fuel for energy. Like a splinter in your mind, says Morpheus, at nearly every turn, efforts to dispatch free energy into the public domain are squelched, blocked, usurped, and murdered. Anti-gravity and free energy technology remain sequestered and locked up in black and white projects for reasons of national security. This is not a new concept. In the Vedic Brahmanas, the details to construct ancient flying machines are not mentioned, for it should be known that were they publicly disclosed, the machines would be wrongly used. However, the answers to free energy propulsion systems continue to be brought into the public domain in various forms. Our guest, Dr. Thomas Vallone, points out in his lectures of the many stories abound within UFO research groups that chronicle the cases of missing time experienced by UFO contactees. In some of these cases, when under hypnosis, the individual may recall a download of technical plans with direction to build a free energy propulsion system. Maybe this is one of the reasons some contactees get harassed and followed by so-called men in black and government agents. In fact, a recent past guest, Mary Hardy, imparted that exact story when she recalled her missing time sequence and was urged to build the Orgone Accumulator Pyramid in her backyard. We look at the research of UFO propulsion systems that include anti-gravitics and zero-point energy. Interestingly, wrapped within this field of study, our guest, Dr. Vallone, has made fascinating breakthroughs in bioenergetic healing products. Dr. Thomas Vallone is an engineering physicist with more than 25 years of experience in emerging energy sciences. His PhD thesis was a feasibility study of zero-point energy for useful work completed for Kennedy Western University, and his master's degree is in physics from the State University of New York at Buffalo. Dr. Vallone has appeared on CNN, A&E, and Discovery channels, as well as being a keynote speaker for many conferences. Dr. Vallone, welcome to Another News.
Happy to be here.
Well, Dr. Vallone, you've covered many areas of research regarding free energy and bioenergy in your lectures and books. I wanted to focus in on the lecture you gave in 2009 titled Researching the Energy and Propulsion of UFOs, because there aren't many professional people with your credentials discussing the topic. And the talk was more than 8 years ago, and I'm curious what advances have been made regarding this type of propulsion in the public domain since the lecture. Before you do that, would you please give listeners some of your background that led you into this area of study?
Sure. Our website, integrityresearchinstitute.org, has a 10-minute disclosure citizens hearing testimonial that actually gives the background of how I got into the energy and propulsion area. And it really started back in 1980 when I was invited to a gravity field conference in Germany. And from there, I was doing lectures every year. And the interesting thing to me was that the homopolar generator was the impetus for me to be celebrating the concept of free energy. Bruce De Palma was the first person I studied with dealing with that invention. And it was interesting that I was a grad student at the SUNY Buffalo at the time and brought back the idea that perhaps I could do it as a master's project in physics. And my professor agreed and let me do it. So I was tickled pink that I could present a master's project to the university, and they actually allowed me to do what I wanted to do instead of, as 90% of the time, they dictate what the student should do instead. So I tested it for back torque, and unfortunately I did find back torque. So the homopolar generator, in my mind, is not conducive to generating energy from the vacuum. However, as I pursued things later on, the Searle device was the next one, and it turns out as I worked with people like the two Russians, Godin and Roshan, who were replicating the Searle device, it seemed that there were homopolar generators around the ring. And so I helped them to draft a patent and so forth. But interestingly enough, even that one is still in the questionable gray box of possible, as Dr. Helputoff calls it. It hasn't been resolved yet, hasn't been duplicated, and it still hasn't produced energy, more energy out than in. But I keep working on things, producing new books. The Zero Point Energy Fuel of the Future is one of the popular books on the subject. And I have a YouTube video that's very popular on that topic as well.
So listeners get a better understanding. The back torque is important to understand, but you mentioned the word vacuum. You're talking about the quantum vacuum?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that a little bit more for listeners in that context?
Sure. Yeah, and actually the book I mentioned, Zero Point Energy, The Fuel of the Future, is designed as a popular book, pictures on every page, to help the public, the general public, understand the concept of zero point energy, the negative energy, Dirac C as they call it, and the quantum vacuum. All of these concepts are very mysterious to most people, and in fact have been misused in the internet quite a bit. But to explain it very succinctly, the quantum vacuum is essentially the sea that we basically live in. And it's an invisible sea of energy. There's so much energy in every square cubic centimeter of space. It's incredible to imagine how much energy you can extract from that. And Max Planck did a lot of work on the field, specifically the black body radiation curve, and had to include zero point energy in that equation. But the important part is, and I have to give credit to Dr. Helputoff for this, he actually wrote a journal article explaining that the electron is held away from the proton, which are oppositely charged, by the quantum vacuum fluctuations. And once you get your head around this concept that here's oppositely charged electrostatically attracted particles that should collapse, and yet they don't. And that's where the quantum uncertainty principle sort of tells us something mysterious, but really it's the fluctuations of quantum vacuum, particles jumping in and out of the vacuum that cause pressure. And the Casimir effect between two parallel plates is the other experiment that's been very well verified, more pressure outside the two plates than there are inside. And just to clarify that even better for the public that's listening, we had a keynote speaker, Dr. Pinto, Fabrizio Pinto, a very famous JPL scientist, give a lecture on the quantum vacuum. And his analogy of the Casimir plates that I just mentioned is two boats close together. And he said, anybody who's on the sea and has a boat knows that you never get too close to another boat in the same direction, in other words, parallel to another boat, because he said they will always hit. And that's exactly what the Casimir force does, too. There's more force outside than there is in between the two objects, and therefore they're pulled together.
And those are energy sources to take advantage of when you begin to scale up.
Exactly. And that's exactly one focus that I have and many other scientists have too, is how many ways can we conceive of transducing, of engineering the vacuum? And so I did a PhD thesis on practical conversion methods. So I was very happy to do that.
Well, Dr. Vallone, in your lecture, you referenced Trevor Paglen's book, I Could Tell You, But Then You'd Have to Be Destroyed by Me. I actually have that book, and I'm stunned by the number of different patches and alleged projects. There are images on the patches showing E.T. on a B-2 bomber, but you point out the eeriness of the slogans, such as, let them hate us so long as they fear, keep your distance, you uninitiated people. What do you think is going on in the black operations world based on some of these patches?
Well, actually, in my opinion, and I've actually spent a lot of time with one particular Black Project guy that has a very high clearance level and worked at S4, Area 51's offshoot. So what I see in this book that you're referring to is the intermediate groups that are basically militarily oriented for various programs and goals. So some of them are surveillance and so forth, and the special projects, flight test squadron, for example. That's what we see in a lot of the patches, are flight testing orientation. But what I find more interesting are the Black Project guys who are in the high clearance level that will actually tell us about the back engineered saucers and the technology that's available for propulsion and energy. And those are hours long of conversations. And I've followed this consistently for years now, to the point where I've actually gotten to know and spend time with Linda Moulton Howe. We had her as a keynote speaker last year at the COFE 9 Conference on Future Energy, the ninth one in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we have a DVD of her lecture, which is fabulous, two-hour autobiography. And it comes down to the fact that there are solid-state devices that produce electrogravitic force. And this is a very interesting area of investigation and research.
It is, and Linda Moulton Howe has done really good work in this area and very complicated and complex lectures. Now, I wanted to get into the slogans on the patches. It's strange to me that "let them hate us" or "keep your you initiated people." There's a contempt here that's being projected. What do you think about that?
Well, to be honest, this is the military industrial complex showing their superiority. I mean, you have groups that have autonomy with, for example, if we talk about the black budget. All the media has reported the black budget to the press, in Washington Post, for example, and elsewhere, and they specifically have only defined the NIP. The National Intelligence Program. That's $50 billion project. And so they say, oh, this is the black budget. You know, and I'm looking at the Federation of American Scientists, which I invite the public listening to go to FAS.org and get the truth. The truth is, every year, the black budget has gone up on the NIP from $40 billion in 2005 up to $57.7 billion in 2018 fiscal year. However, what I'm interested in, and I think other people in this area should be interested in, is the MIP. And that's a military intelligence program. You never see the MIP defined or budgeted in the press, and yet that's a $20 billion program. It's been $20 billion for decades now. Every year, they have $20 billion to spend on whatever they want. Both of these budgets are undisclosed, unaccountable, and the taxpayer never knows where the money went. But the MIP is where the hardware goes, and that's where the boys with toys, they call it. I mean, the best example is the Gulf Breeze UFO conferences years ago, and I heard from a black budget project guy that the reason they had UFO sightings during the conference was the fellow I talked to, he said, I know who flew the craft. He was just doing it for fun because he knew the conference was going on. So that's exactly what we're faced with.
Hmm. What year was this? What year are you referencing the Gulf Breeze conference?
Let me Google it, and I'll tell you exactly. But it's a famous synchronicity, as they call it. Gee, during the conference, UFOs showed up right outside our door, and everybody was astonished.
I'm familiar with the Gulf Breeze story. I interviewed one of the guys in the lawn chairs that would watch the UFOs and record it at night.
There you go.
Yeah, and
pretty well known. Yeah.
It's very well known. But they would drop that, you know, the slag or whatever it was that would drop out of these craft into the ocean. So these glowing things would fall out of these objects. Thought that was interesting.
excuse me for interrupting, but Google us and tells me it's 1998, 1996, that era. Second annual was in 94.
That's about that time. It's definitely a fine line in terms of whether it's us or them in these craft.
Exactly. Yeah, that always is the next question that I usually get. You know, what percentage? 75% probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly don't have to get into that realm because your research is certainly as interesting in terms of the technology and the various departments that exist within the United States government. And many listeners may not know about the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office, you've referenced in various talks. Can you tell listeners what that organization is and why it's important to know?
Well, actually, the NRO is one of the most highly top-secret organizations that the government has. And my experience with the NRO is very limited. However, I was at a National Space Society meeting, and they had a mysterious NRO rep show up to give a short lecture. And he was literally disclosed as John Doe on the program, so we didn't know who he'd be when he showed up. But as it turns out, it was the deputy director. And what was interesting is the nature of his lecture was as if he was giving a pep talk to his staff. And I was astonished because, first of all, the lecture before was by Dr. Paul Werbos, who was at the time at the National Science Foundation, and he was discussing the importance of the declassification of certain technologies so he could get solar satellites in space. And this is another very favorable project for getting renewable energy. But the important part is Bernard Hart, I think was his name, the deputy director, as he gave his lecture, he was saying, "We need more major muscle moves." That's an exact quote. That's a phrase he used to get up rocket launches, missile launches every month. And that was his message. And he kept repeating it in various ways, how important it was to be able to get launches every month, and the major muscle moves. I had no idea what that meant, but it sounded pretty impressive, you know. So what I usually do with guys like this is I prepare ahead of time, and then I leave the auditorium and catch them on the way out, because they always leave immediately after their lecture. So I had a one-on-one with this guy right at in the hallway. And the discussion went as follows. I basically gave him the case for inertial shielding. I said, this is a classified technology. It's very simple. It's some type of field effect that shields inertia, and it's very well known for any of the UFO craft, and it allows for instantaneous direction changes and also instantaneous acceleration. Very favorable for any limited force producer, like rockets, for example, and very efficient. So he could get his rockets going up every month if he wanted to. And what his response was, after I described how this could be declassified for NASA use as well as his use, he said, well, something like that is usually increases in classification until it's out of sight. That was the exact words he used. He says it's cheaper for us to reinvent it with a contractor, and it'll come out at a lower classification level. And so my response is, you're asking the taxpayer to pay twice for a technology just to be able to get it into the civilian realm. And he agreed that we were, if he even was successful in getting it declassified.
There's so much in that exchange, and it makes me think of the quote by Ben Rich that you reference as well. We all quote Ben Rich is the director, was the director of Lockheed Skunk Works until 91. We already have the means, he says, to travel among the stars, but these technologies are locked up in black projects, and it would take an act of God to get them out to benefit humanity. Anything you can imagine, we already know how to do. Now, I guess the cognitive dissonance here in your story is, why would this person heading the NRO be so concerned to getting the major muscle move and getting rockets up into space with their satellites when they already have this technology? Why doesn't he have access to this?
You know, I've asked that question to a lot of high-ranking officials in various government agencies. To me and you and me, we basically think it's a mystery. However, to them, I basically confront them saying, do you get classified material going across your desk on a regular basis? And you'd be surprised at the answer. Most of them say no, which is very astonishing to me, because you think if anybody deserves to, you know, have at least access to it because they have all the clearance already, you know, these guys should. And I talked to a guy at the Goddard Space Center the same way, you know, gave his lecture, caught him out in the hallway, and he was the head of all the program direction. And he still didn't get any classified material. And he basically laughed at my book on electrogravitics. He thought it was the breakthrough propulsion program that failed. These guys are so compartmentalized that, unfortunately, they're believing in rockets, they'll continue to believe in rockets, and we're basically following the thousand-year-old Chinese method to get out in space.
It's so compartmentalized, meaning even the people in the top tiers of these organizations that do have access to classified material do not believe there is, or may not know there is technology accessing zero-point energy.
Right.
Okay. I just want to clarify that. Well, is it possible to have a secret, highly advanced space program operating in real time around us completely undetected?
I would separate that question into two. Is it possible to have a secret program? And I would say yes, it probably would be detected, but let's go for the first part and say, you know, I'm looking right at the website for To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. I invite people listening to check it out. It's interesting because here's the latest attempt to do exactly what you're talking about. Get a secret program going with lots of money by civilians who really don't know what they're doing to discover some new propulsion methods. And unless you've got a defector from Black Projects, they're going to be doing trial and error for a long, long time.
Well, I kind of didn't mean that in particular. What I meant is, is there a secret space program developed by these insiders in the black operations that are using zero-point energy or an energy propulsion system that does not burn fuel to visit other star systems and planets without us knowing about, us meaning the public domain?
I would say absolutely yes. I used to hesitate to answer that question before, but when you have the experiences I have with people that work in the deep black project areas, let me give you an example. Mark McCandlish, aerospace illustrator, who I had a fight with to get his chapter on a hovercraft that was demonstrated at Norton Air Force Base in 1988. I had to fight for a year to get him to include it in my Electrogravitics 2 book, which is very popular nowadays. It's our bestseller, actually. The reason I mentioned Mark McCandlish is that he has given lectures on his experiences. He's come so close to classified craft that he's been admonished, lectured to, and threatened. But what he does is interesting to me. He hears a story, a rumor, and then he goes and investigates. Well, there was one in California where a particular hangar late at night has a saucer, he explains, that takes off for various flights and then comes back. And what he did is he went and talked to the local sheriff, who blocks off the street at night to allow for this craft to be able to come out and take off. And the sheriff just admitted automatically. He says, yeah, that's what I do. I just let them, you know, make sure there's no traffic around so they can take off and come back. I mean, it was so matter-of-fact when I heard that story that I just laughed, because that's how ignorant we are. I mean, even the Battle of Los Angeles years ago was another example where, you know, UFOs were in plain sight, thousands of people saw them, and then nowadays you're still, you know, having skeptics that don't believe it's possible.
Yes, but to the defense of the public on some of these topics, there's so much money pouring in to prevent a real discussion, you know, on this, and you have these shills and...
And Roswell case closed. And, you know, the Air Force releases a report once again to make sure the coffin is nailed shut. Yeah.
To the defense of the public, they do. I think many people know what that this stuff is going on. Here we are in 2017, but it's unfortunate that we're looked at with contempt. If those patches in Trevor Paglen's book have any standing, it's not good the way the public is looked at, even though they're using taxpayer money.
I fully agree. Yep, and we deserve to be on the committee that decides, you know, where the money is spent and how it's spent and what it's spent for.
It was a large room full of people, all kinds, and they had all arrived at the same building at more or less the same time, and they were all free, and they were all asking themselves the same question: what is behind that curtain?
Our guest is Dr. Thomas Vallone. He's the author of many books, including Zero Point Energy, The Fuel of the Future. We'll be right back after this break. Just tuning in, our guest is Dr. Thomas Vallone. He's an engineering physicist, and we're talking about back engineering, unconventional propulsion systems, and zero-point energy. That's why I like your work, Dr. Vallone. You've brought this out into the public domain. Have you gotten any interference, and are you messed with at all because you've done this work?
No, not so far. I learned years ago from Ken Shoulders, actually, is his name. Ken actually is in a book, several books, actually, but he discovered charge clusters. And it was at the top of the DARPA list for years with help put off. They were exploring military applications, apparently. Little tiny electron clusters that had the ability to penetrate anything. And what he learned is, as he wrote the book on it, he basically sent copies overseas. And then when they showed up at the door, military officers show up at the door with the sequester, you know, secretization orders, he said, "You're too late. It's already been sent overseas." And the guy turned beet red and was super angry. But he said that's the way you protect it from being classified. You make sure it gets out there. And I basically have followed that to make sure everything is in the public, everything that we do.
Do you suspect there are black project technology wrapped in conventional exteriors?
Well, I suppose there's not necessarily any reason to do that when they can fly around as they please. The interesting thing is, you know, I don't know how much detail your listeners are capable of accepting before you sort of put the wall up and say, "I can't believe that's true." But some of the stories I've heard is that we already have bases on Mars and the Moon. And essentially that, you know, when we finally get to Mars, they'll welcome the visitors and so forth. But it's interesting that once you back engineer something, I know Bob Lazar, for example. I spent some time with him too, and these guys are real. You know, they've actually seen craft, worked with craft up close, and all the details they can tell you about the craft are overwhelmingly convincing. And then what I get curious about is how it works, and I'd love to be able to help the civilians and help global warming to be reversed with a clean energy source and a clean propulsion source.
Well, let's take a look at some of the areas of research that you bring to your lectures on zero-point energy. You ask, is there an energy source available for humans to use in the zero-point energy field? And your answer is yes. NASA says that zero-point energy has random electromagnetic waves. Vacuum fluctuations are real. Why is that important to know?
Well, it turns out that, and I have to refer to a conventional diode, as you LEDs, for example. Everyone's familiar with LED screens. Well, diodes are real simple PN junctions that allow for electricity to go in one direction. The interesting thing nowadays is, and I refer to a professor, Garrett Modell, at the University of Colorado. He's, and other researchers as well, even the University of Maryland, have now researched diodes that can rectify infrared radiation. And they're proposing that these diodes can actually supplement solar cells that only work in the visible range. So our solar energy panels can actually be much more efficient as the new diode technology comes on board. Well, what's interesting is these diodes simply allow for fluctuations, thermal fluctuations in that case, to hit the diode junction and then send electrons in only one direction. And that's how simple diodes can work, and that's what I propose for zero-point energy rectification. It'll, on the Earth, it'll tend to do mostly thermal rectification, and that's fine and dandy because we have lots of thermal energy to work with in this realm.
And just so listeners understand the zero point a little bit more, you said when you go around a curve, you're actually bumping into zero point particles, and you know people would think that centrifugal force may be connected to gravity in a way. What's going on there?
Well, I have to give credit to Puthoff and Dr. Puthoff, Dr. Haish, and Rudell. Those three gentlemen are the kingpins of this theory. They published in Physical Review, the most prestigious physics journal on the Earth, in many opinions. And what was interesting is Arthur C. Clarke actually took their theory of gravity and inertia and put it into his 3001 book, the very last book that Arthur C. Clarke wrote. So, and he called it a space drive. And he's got a whole chapter on it. Puthoff was so happy he emailed me and wanted me, and I did. I bought the book as well. But given that background, the important part is not my theory, but theirs. And what's interesting is they proved that gravity and inertia are simply phenomenon that react in the sea of charged particles that make up the quantum vacuum. And the zero-point energy fluctuations, which is sort of like the waves on top of an ocean, the zero-point energy fluctuations are what we tend to see as we monitor various things near absolute zero. The best example, I have 10 examples in my book, but the best example is liquid helium doesn't freeze even as you get to micro degrees of toward absolute zero, below 1 degree Kelvin. It still doesn't freeze. What's keeping it liquid? It's only the quantum vacuum fluctuations, zero-point energy.
That's the temperature of space.
Right, exactly. And well, no. What's interesting is the temperature of space is 3 degrees Kelvin.
Oh.
So it's even hotter than we've achieved on Earth with these experiments. And then there's a whole bunch of... We're working on a book for Dave Fronig now, a professor at the University of Adelaide in Australia, on how the quantum vacuum can provide propulsion. And it's an interesting, he's done lots of theories and tests and examples of toroidal methods for transducing the force.
This is a very interesting area. You said the conservation of energy rule doesn't apply within the quantum vacuum. Why is that important to know?
Well, interestingly enough, as you research the field, looking at journal articles, and I've got piles of them everywhere, the field, the experts are split. Half of them think the vacuum is conservative, and the other half think it's non-conservative. If it's conserved, then you got to keep track of every last little joule of energy, J-O-U-L-E, by the way, of energy that you pull from the vacuum, which has to be replaced. If it's non-conservative, as Hayes and Putoff and Wettis believe, then you basically have the chance of using that energy, letting it dissipate, and essentially it'll somehow get back to the vacuum if it needs to.
Dr. Volan, can you talk about your designs in capturing zero-point energy?
Sure. The basic design and proposal, and I'm sending it off to a FOIL research institute in Monaco, actually, is the next target, is essentially using diode arrays of literally billions of diodes in a small, compact, even, say, a 1 meter square or 1 meter cube. So that essentially you have all the diodes rectifying either thermal or non-thermal. They're mixed together in our earthly environment energy, so that essentially you have a solid-state transducer for electricity. And this, to me, is our destiny. If we don't achieve this in a short amount of time, all of the experts are predicting, including our website from Dr. Jim Hansen, that the 1 degree, the 2 degree C, the 3 degree C will tend to be continually detrimental to the human race, to the point where we get to 4 and 5 degrees C, and we're going to see, you know, major problems worldwide. So we have to achieve and make this breakthrough in energy. And all societies usually have declined if they don't find more and more concentrated forms of energy. This is a textbook a historical discovery.
Yeah, I have to ask, why do you think the military and industrial system and corporate structures let humanity flail when they have free energy devices ready to roll and everything's ready? And not only that, they're geoengineering. A lot of listeners, and this is an area that this show is focused on, is geoengineering that is also causing the warming of the planet, but it's not often mentioned. But why are we, as human beings, left to flail and find this on our own when it's sequestered in these black projects?
Well, that's the military attitude, and I've talked to them that the more deeply entrenched they are in the military consciousness, the more you'll hear the ways that it can be used by certain groups for surreptitious means and methods. For example, given, say, the inertial shielding, which I described earlier. This is going to be some kind of a field effect around a craft, probably why most UFOs are circular. The important part about that invention is, you know, okay, you get fast acceleration, you get easy turns, and you can zip along to places outside the Earth very quickly. If that's true, even if you stay within the Earth environment by the inhabitant or the occupant of that craft, what's to say that international laws and rules are going to be obeyed? You know, the military consciousness can convince you security is at risk. and then you get into their frame of mind and say, oh, we better keep a cap on all of this, you know, and maintain World War II consciousness, which is what we're doing. We're driving around in World War II cars still. You know?
Dr. Vallone, you hit on some very interesting points, and we all know that it is not a problem for governments to come up with laws, restrictions, and boundaries when something like a free energy source is brought out into the public domain. I'm sure it's not a problem for them to figure that out. I don't think that's a problem. I think there's something else going on, but I appreciate your answers on this.
You're welcome.
Let's go back to the inertial shielding for a minute, because this is a fascinating area that I didn't really consider. However, I've had a past guest on who was seeing a lot of UFO activity on her property in Murraysville, Pennsylvania. It's a rural area. You may know her. Her name is Allison Cruz. She'd experienced a lot of interference by Homeland Security for uploading videos on YouTube. But when one thing that she was doing is spectral analysis, but she also noticed that there was some sort of shield around the craft, and she thought that was a cloaking device. But I would imagine if there's an inertial shielding, it could also be used as a cloaking device.
Not necessarily. The two of them are probably different, and oftentimes you hear anecdotally the UFO, for example, changing in color until it's invisible, and then or taken off as it changes color, perhaps. But in my opinion, it's possible that it's part of the propulsion system. But each craft has a different propulsion system. However, I'm intrigued by the kind that seemed to be in the hull, and the electrovitic propulsion seems to be something that could be engineered for civilian use, and the inertial shield as well, which could be very interesting to develop, so that at least we have maybe safer automobiles, even for airplanes and so forth, without even thinking about spaceships.
Has the reducing of inertial mass been simulated in a lab yet?
I'm sure it has. In fact, I've heard anecdotal experiences of it on the Earth. However, these are classified projects. So I'm hoping to develop the tests, which can be even a 5%, 10% change, and produce a journal article that at least shows the phenomena is real, and then go from there.
Yeah, I was wondering if any students or fans of yours that may have tried to simulate reducing inertial mass. So no one's tried to do it within your fan base or students?
Not so far, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because we do invite students to contact us, especially graduating university students and graduate students that are ready for their thesis. And we've helped several of them to negotiate with their professors so they pick a thesis that they like and a project that they like centered around some of our interesting research areas.
Global warming answer, you would think that the power structures concerned about global warming would be funding your type of work and designing energy sources that don't burn fuel.
Oh, I fully agree. If we were aimed at writing grant proposals for various projects, which we are, it's possible. But there are a lot of very conventional solar and wind and geothermal projects that are just as attractive for funding at this time. What we try to do is to aim at things that are at the cutting edge. For example, osmotic power. Virtually no one knows about osmotic power or piezoelectric panels in the highway. There's even the moisture power, which MIT has pioneered. It's fascinating to me that there are discoveries now being made that are very viable and also very robust into the megawatt area, which also can be developed.
Dr. Vallone, there are stories abound within UFO research groups that chronicle the many cases of missing time experienced by contactees. In some of the cases, when under hypnosis, the individual may recall a download of technical plans to build a free energy propulsion system or accurate distance star maps. We've had a guest on, Mary Hardy, who had a similar experience. She had missing time and was directed to build a pyramid in her backyard that was also an orgone accumulator. You have friends and colleagues who have had similar experiences. Can you tell listeners a little more about that?
Sure. I know Mary Hardy as well. However, the two I usually refer to are John Searle and Roy Thornton, and even Pat Flanagan. But the Roy Thornton I knew very well and spent time with, and also John Searle. And both of them had UFO experiences at some time. Specifically, Roy Thornton had missing time, and essentially then had the dreams and so forth and had to build it. He was a real estate agent. And he got several patents on his inertial propulsion device. The device has actually passed the pendulum test and the canoe test. It can be seen in the video, which is now free online, called Free Energy Race to Zero Point. I was a technical consultant for that project back in the 1990s. And Roy Thornton's demo can be seen there as a method to produce force based on rotating gyroscopic gears. And what's interesting is that this is actually a viable method for propulsion and has been for years, but the public didn't know about it. And this is one of the success stories that I can freely talk about, and that is Boeing, the aerospace company, actually did visit Thornton and also Bob Cook, who had another patented inertial propulsion device, and then developed their own based on scissoring gyros. And it's called a control moment gyroscope. Well, I was lucky enough to have Mike Gamble, as a retired engineer from Boeing, now working on a project that we're funding to specifically develop a tabletop model based on this propulsion system. So we're actually publishing a journal article on it, and hopefully we'll have a demo by next year for the Conference on Future Energy in Albuquerque to prove that this is actually a possible propulsion system.
Well, Dr. Vallone, another interest of yours is bioenergetics, and Nikola Tesla's published work titled High-Frequency Oscillators for Electrotherapeutic and Other Purposes. Can you talk about your bioenergy products and what Nikola Tesla was talking about?
Yes. The interesting thing is Nikola Tesla essentially developed the Tesla coil back in around 1895, 1896, and the results of that were that the AC electricity needed to power the Tesla coil was also developed at around exactly the same time. So the beauty of that result was that the Tesla coil then could be used in medical situations. And I wrote a book on it called Bioelectromagnetic Healing, Rationale for Its Use. And the two most important principles behind the use of a Tesla coil for medical purposes is that the Tesla coil tends to boost the transmembrane potential, which is the high voltage shell around every cell membrane, and also it provides electrons, and electrons are the antioxidant, the active ingredient called antioxidants. So, and we do sell them at the bioenergydevice.org website, EM Pulsar and various other Premier Juniors that provide these therapeutic benefits.
Could you give out that website, please? Let listeners know what it is.
It's called bioenergydevice.org.
Tesla, in this write-up, Tesla concludes correctly that, quote, tissues are condensers, which I thought was very interesting. And I've never really heard about this before, even though listeners know that we've talked about the zapper on the show and some of the work in bioenergetics. But I didn't know that some of his concepts were put into devices by other inventors.
Yes, yes, and even that 100-year-old concept of the individual cell being a capacitor or a condenser was very insightful and intuitive based on his research.
Why do you think this didn't take off?
Well, it became actually the Flexner Report is the reason. It's described in the first chapter of my book. Flexner Report was the AMA and the FDA's answer to having a one-time investment in an invention that has therapeutic long-lasting effects. Instead, the pharmaceutical companies were much more profitable and more attractive to doctors that essentially wanted to fund hospitals and have monthly bills that could be revenue producing.
Yes, there's a pattern here.
Yep. Yeah, and the Flexen report is the reason. It's historically stopped most electrotherapies in hospitals.
And it wasn't because it wasn't scientifically or medically sound. It's because it wasn't generating revenue.
Apparently so. And also scientifically, the research hadn't been done effectively to explain the effects. Only 100 years later have we been now understanding the science behind electrotherapy. And it's becoming a wondrous experience for me to discover verification of Tesla's discoveries and others as time goes on.
Have you used the e-impulsor and some of the devices that you manufacture and seen results?
Yes, absolutely. We credit Dr. Glenn Gordon, medical doctor, for the product called the e-impulsor. And it's fascinating that it's a magnetic pulsar that essentially activates the heat shock protein 70. This is exactly what Dr. Gordon discovered with the NASA study, and specifically the nanosecond rise time for the pulsing design. And it's we have lots of testimonials on our website, bioenergydevice.org, and 30-day money-back guarantee, and we never get them back. The future, hopefully, will be as bright enough to have to wear shades.
Considering what we spoke about just now, are you hopeful about the future of humanity and our ability, with the help of people like yourself, to reach an escape velocity to create free energy and free energy propulsion systems?
Yes, I am. I think it's going to be a grassroots movement. It's already happening. Cities and individuals and countries are answering the call, even for global warming. And what's interesting, even automobile ad manufacturers are now predicting and guaranteeing they're going to manufacture only electric cars by a certain date. So it's very fascinating to see this type of development on an individual level.
Dr. Vallone, engineering physicist with 25 years of experience in emerging energy science. Your website is integrityresearchinstitute.org. Thank you very much for being on In Other News.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.
Mm-hmm.